Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, our coverage of the National Homebrewers Conference in San Diego begins with Club Night. You'll hear what it's like to wander about with thousands of other homebrewers as they sample delicious homebrew from many homebrew clubs. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on the Google Plus as well. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our associate link on basicbrewing.com. That'll take you back to Amazon, where you can shop as you normally do. It won't cost you any extra, but the difference is that you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support, especially because you remembered to click the link while we were gone. So we greatly appreciate your support, and we're glad to be back. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who's done so already. Amount of practice. Been a while since I've done this. We got a lot of sound to play this week, so I want to talk a bit about our sponsor, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. You've heard me talk about their electric brew-in-a-bag system, and specifically about the one that they gave me to play with. It's the 240-volt, 10-gallon system with the pump, and it's got an amazing Blickman boil coil in the bottom of it, an electric heating element. And you can see Steve and me test it out at youtube.com/highgravitybrew. Anyway, the story I want to share with you about this system is of a big old barley wine that Andy Sparks and I brewed with the system a few weeks ago. It was inspired by Toe Sucker Ale, which was brewed to celebrate the summer solstice at New Albion Brewing Company back in the day. In fact, Jack McAuliffe supervised part of our brew day, but I'm name-dropping now. Anyway, we poured almost 22 pounds of grain into my high-gravity brew-in-a-bag electric system, and it handled it like a champ. The mash was a bit stiff at first, but as the rest went on, it loosened up, and we were able to control the temperature using the PID controller and the pump very nicely. We started off at around 144 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 62 C, and stayed there for about an hour, and we monitored the gravity using a refractometer as we went along and raised the temperature slowly over the next 30 minutes and wound up at mash-out temperature that's 170 degrees Fahrenheit or 77 C. And, man, it was a lot of fun to play with from just from a gearhead perspective. I was very happy with the results. Our efficiency was more than 70%, even with all that grain and no sparging after the mash. Of course, it kind of sparges as you go along because the pump recirculates the wort and to maintain the temperature, and it has a spray head at the top that distributes the wort back over the grain. So there was kind of a sparging as we went along. But as the mash went along, we stirred every now and then and monitored the efficiency as we went, and I was very happy. The recipe came from Don Barkley, who is the assistant brewer for New Albion. And thanks to some confusion over email, our version of Toe Sucker Ale is a bit stronger than the original. Ours is around 10.4% ABV. So, yeesh, it's a big old beer, and it's in the keg as of yesterday, and I got to say, it's pretty tasty. So, I continue to be impressed by the high-gravity brew-in-a-bag system, and you can check all the systems out and build your own at highgravitybrew.com. And for ingredients and many other products, High Gravity offers $7.99 flat rate shipping. So check them out at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's move on to the fun and good info that we got into at Club Night it was probably my favorite club night, and it was the 10th that Steve and I have been to. It was outside in San Diego. The weather was great, and we had a lot of fun wandering about and talking to friends you know and those we met for the first time.
Well, Steve Wilkes, here we are outside.
Yep, next to the popcorn machine.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah,
look at that.
Some natural sound of popcorn.
It's club night.
It is club night.
What does club night mean?
It means that there's a whole bunch of clubs here, and they all got their own little booths, and they're serving their best stuff.
Their best stuff. I just am very excited about finding lots of good stuff, like saisons.
I am too. Yeah. There's Dave.
There's Dave.
We see Dave every year.
Dave.
We're not doing video this year, Dave.
No,
we're doing
me.
Introduce yourself. Who are you? Where are you from? Mouthful of peanuts.
That's your nickname.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Dave King. I'm from Central New York. Our beer club is Beer Brewers in the Endicott region.
Oh, well, there
you go. The Alfdeutsch spelling, or Belgian, whichever you like. Whatever.
Are y'all pouring this evening?
No, we're not. This is a little bit too far for us.
But we're
going to be in Baltimore next year.
Oh, well,
you betcha. It's a hop, skip, and jump down across Pennsylvania from us. So
we will be there as well. So I don't guess you've sampled anything yet, have you?
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
Do you think?
But my cup is empty. We can't have that last very long.
No. What do you like so far?
I like the IPAs. I'm just a hophead from way back, and I'm sorry. I like some other ones. I try them, but I always bounce back the good old IPAs. Yeah. And they got some great ones down here, don't they?
Oh, yeah. West Coast, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good place to be for IPAs.
Yeah.
So you guys finding fun stuff?
We just got here. Our glasses are dry. They're not only empty, they're dry.
Yeah. Well, you have to fix that.
we better mosey.
Yes.
We better mosey on down.
Good to talk to you, Dave.
All right, guys. See you, James.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Well, there you go. We got to find some beer.
Let's go do that.
Who we got here?
Portland Brewers Collective. All four of us.
And you're the Portland on this side?
Oh, yeah. West Coast Portland, Oregon. Real Portland.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, there you go. Yeah. So what have we had that's good?
The cask. Brown ale. First beer we had.
Yeah.
Have to drink the cask ale.
Okay.
Yeah, I see a beer engine right there.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
Is it a Southern English brown, I think?
Yeah, we saw a beer engine, and we went for it because beer engines are awesome.
That's a good instinct.
Right.
Good to meet you guys.
Yeah. Hey,
cheers.
Hey,
cheers.
All right. Here we are. We are at the Mash Heads from San Diego, the local club.
I love this.
The beer coming out of the beer engine, an English gentleman from the South.
Wow.
So the beer from the beer engine is highly recommended. Introduce yourself.
Fred Brophy, I'm a mash head. How you doing?
Is that a chronic condition?
A chronic condition?
Yeah. Oh, I guess around here, chronic may mean something else.
Chronic can mean different things around here. So here you go. If you like, it's a little more room temperature. So if you like your beers a little bit warmer and a little bit flatter. Good English style.
Is this your beer by any chance?
It's not. I have a bitter that'll come onto this thing in a little bit. So
awesome.
I'm pulling somebody else's. We have an English guy in the club, and if he has like a carbonated beer, he'll actually take a fork to it and spin it up. Yeah. So this is kind of for him too.
Oh, that's nice. It's good to meet you. What do you think, Steve?
Hang on, I'll tell you. Oh, yeah, that's very nice. It's really good.
It's nice. Oh, yeah. It's the carbonation is fairly low, but it's to be expected, right?
I'm glad you like it. It kind of has a little bit of a funky character, like just a little bit sour kind of thing, you know? But that's the character of those English beers.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
We're lucky as homebrewers because we can use any kind of yeast that we want, unlike production breweries that kind of can get stuck in a rut. It's an English ale yeast, so from White Labs, which is our local favorite.
Damn good beer.
Very nice.
CBG.
Cheers.
All right, have a great time.
So what were you saying?
Well, I was saying that I really do like those English cask ales. They kind of define session beer to me. Relatively low alcohol. I think this one's actually 4.5%, 4.8%. Higher on the scale in a way. But, boy, you could just drink this all night long and just not feel like you'd just been knocked over. Both from the alcohol and because of the carbonation. I mean, the carbonation, let's face it, kind of...
Bloats
and you bloat and gloat. So this is nice.
All right, we're coming up to a very high tech looking booth.
This is
an old computer. What do we got here? Introduce yourself. Where are you from? And what do we got?
So we're the Sutzer's Home Brew Club from Silicon Valley. We have about 8 different beers, ranging from Kolsch's, a couple IPAs, some porters, even a mead from Hawaii.
And what is this dispensing device we're looking at right here?
So right now, this is a never obsolete computer tower. It's from sometime either early 2000s, maybe late 90s. But the important thing is it's never obsolete. And we've refurbished it and is now pouring out, kiss me, I'm faced.
You can see in here. There,
I use her lotion.
Let's take a look.
That works.
It's a jockey box now.
I'll get a picture.
But it says never obsolete on the front.
It was at one point an actual computer tower.
you guys need to have a booth in the exhibition space. You got something here.
I think we may be making move there soon.
So what's in there again?
This is a Kiss Me I'm Faced. It's an oak aged milk stout.
Well, somebody needs to pull the handle for me. Can you? Will you pull my handle, please, sir?
Not in public. Not happy.
Thank you. Excellent.
Okay, milk.
You pull your handle all you want. Oh, that's nice. It's smooth like a milk stout, but it's got the oak character. It's got a little bit of vanilla in there from the wood.
You do have to find somebody else to kiss you. That we do not provide. It was not provided by the club. No,
I think that's false advertising.
Yeah. Well, you can ask this gentleman in the beard.
Maybe later. After we had a few barley wines.
Three more beers, and then you'll be asking.
There you go.
We're now going to liquid cooling.
This is delicious. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Great. Awesome.
All right, cheers.
Oh, okay. We have to get Steve's seal of approval. Okay.
Well, I really like it. It's got a great hard drive in it, and it'll be easy to maintain over time. The floppy disk is getting a little limp, but we got to work on that.
That sounds like your problem. Okay, we're standing. You guys are near the end of the longest line here.
Yes, sir.
Do you know what you're standing in line for?
Not exactly, but it's a big line. That's got to be a good sign on homebrew night.
I don't see Vinny Chilurzo anywhere near the beginning of that line.
The shorter lines haven't worked out too good so far, so we're hoping this one's going to...
Introduce yourselves and where you're from.
Dan Lewis from Fairfax, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Matt Appler, Fairfax, Virginia.
There you go.
Rick from Fairfax, Virginia.
So next year, it's going to be in your backyard, right?
That's what we hear. Yeah, right up the street from us.
Are you going to be ready?
I think so. Franklin Glenn's going to represent, right? We're going to have the club ready by then?
If we recover.
All right, we will look for you next year.
Thanks, sir. We'll
Cheers,
be there.
Guys.
We'll be there. Cheers.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
But you seem to have an encumbrance.
No, we're looking for macro beer. We got to bust it.
Who you gonna call?
Budbusters.
Tell me who you are, where you're from, and what are you wearing?
Sure. My name is Ken Getty. I'm with Chaos Brew Club, and I'm wearing a 3-gallon Proton keg dispensing a 12.5% rye barrel aged Russian Imperial Stout with cherries added.
That sounds great.
Okay, yeah. Gonna get a small squirt.
There you go.
Thank you. That's plenty. It's gonna be a long night.
If I drink much more of this, I'll be crossing streams later.
Yeah. Do not cross the streams.
that takes on an entirely new meaning here.
Yeah. And we've seen the lines, so. What do you think?
Ooh, that's tasty. Is it your beer?
It is. Yeah, this was a club beer. So,
oh boy,
we had 12 brewers get together, and we ended up filling a full, 55-gallon keg and added the cherries. So, yeah, we're very proud of it.
Very nice.
Yeah, the cherries are... Yeah, so when did you add the cherries? Yeah, give us the detail.
Yeah, so we added the cherries about 8 months, and we left... we put the cherries in the barrel, and we left the cherries on there for about 3 months. And so we pulled this out back in middle of December. So it's mellowed a little bit.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah, well, you know, there is no Steve, only Zool.
No, it's a... Did I see the Stay Puft? Hey, yeah, there's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Marshmallow Man.
I just made the connection.
Yeah, we have about 9 members in jumpsuits with very Ghostbuster-esque, and we're also joined by the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
And do you all have kegs? There's two have kegs.
Most of us do. Have the proton packs.
Very nice. Yes. Thank you very much. Good job.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
Cheers.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, it's James Spencer and Steve Wilkes of Basic Brewing Radio.
Doug Warzynski, introduce your friend.
Over here is Mike the Hop Guy.
Because we don't know. Mike the Hop Guy is going to be in another episode, but I don't know what order I'm going to be in. So, Mike, introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Mike Gizell. They call me Mike the Hop Guy.
and for Doug Warzynski, hardcore Doug Warzynski fans, you'll remember the podcast that y'all did called...
Homebrewing Perspectives.
Yes. But is it still out there on the internet?
It's out there. It can be found. I Googled myself just to be sure, and I no longer host the website, but somebody else had replicated it, so it's out there.
Once you set something free on the internet,
it's out there. Yeah, there's some pictures I sent my wife a few years ago that are out there too. But we'll not get into that.
I don't want to hear about that.
It's on the fourth page.
Yeah, talking about Googling yourself. Now, what have you had that's good?
What we've Well, we actually are packing our own homebrew to share with friends and family, but we've had some great stuff. The best part of this experience is seeing the effort that the club's put into it. Really impressive social experiment. I've loved that. People are showing up with a lot of stuff, set up booths from all across the country. I mean, that's a massive amount of effort. The homebrew's awesome, but the community's even better. This is, last night, lots of great breweries bringing out their booths, but... Tonight is definitely a different vibe. A lot of folks are standing around. We're a lot more conversation with the people that are pouring. People, the clubs are bringing beers they're proud of. So you stand there, you talk with them about how great their beer is, and you talk about what they went into it and what their efforts were and where they sourced their barrels. And it's a much more in-depth conversation with each of the brewers, and that's awesome.
So I forgot this is your first time, and Mike the Hop Guy is your first time as well.
My first time here as well, and this is great. I live in San Diego, so I'm around all these craft breweries all the time, but this is a completely different dimension. This is really exciting, a lot of fun.
So what did you bring? What are you pouring?
Well, we brought, famously, I've got a Belgian, basically a house brown ale that I've made in honor of when I ruined my first homebrewing setup. I call it my Burner Bender Belgian Ale. when I exceeded the weight rating of the burner that I was, I put a triple batch on. And luckily I was brewing with a friend who shouted at me at the last second, and I had to hop up onto a picnic table in my backyard as probably 17 gallons of boiling wort poured onto the ground behind me. And I was wearing nothing more protective than a pair of Crocs at the time, and yes, I admit to wearing those. And out of that huge batch, only 3 gallons stayed in the brew pot that wasn't ruined. I bottled it. I actually gave the most of it to my friend who was there with me that day. He was supposed to get a good portion of that. And I'm not a superstitious person, but that recipe felt jinxed or cursed, and it was probably for 10 years I didn't try and replicate that beer, even though those 3 gallons turned out great. So this was actually the first time in a decade that I brewed this beer and named it thusly.
Excellent.
You want to try some?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to ruin the
whoa,
I've got one like that I call Old Disaster.
Oh,
Sting out and SOS.
Thank you, Sting.
So it should be, what's that?
I said thank you, Sting.
So, let's see here. My fortune cookie on the label says it was brewed in February, bottled in April, and ought to be somewhere in the vicinity of 7.3 ABV.
It's very nice.
Hoppy brown ale.
Yeah. It's fairly yeast. It's fairly dry, which you would probably may expect with the. Is there any sugar in this?
There was actually. I added a couple of pounds of turbinado sugar.
Ah, well, there you go. So it dried it out nicely.
Don't point that at me.
That's what she said.
No, it's nice and dry. It's great. I really like this a lot. Great flavor. Don't know what else to say.
Mm. Why used 3787? I think the Belgian high gravity. Some dark roasty malts in there, and a little more hops than are appropriate for your average Belgian beer. So.
What do you think, Mike the Hop Guy?
I think it's an excellent beer. I marvel at your guys' skills. It's really good stuff. Awesome.
Nicely done, Doug.
Thank you, sir.
Very nicely done.
Idaho!
Idaho! Yeah! How are you? Yes. We have representatives from Idaho here with us tonight.
Are you guys following us, or are we following you?
Oh, I think they're stalking us, dear. Every place we go, we seem to see them. James and Steve. They stole our cheese.
What? Now what?
He stole our cheese.
No, you gave us that cheese. That I don't know. It's this.
There's some debate about whether it was given or taken. So.
You were eating cheese at the bottle shop, and it was this stuff that I'd never heard of before.
And it was amazing cheese.
It was pretty good.
It was very nice cheese.
All right, so introduce yourselves and where are you from?
Carolyn Greener from Nampa, Idaho.
I'm John Greener from the same place.
Are you related?
Yes, brother and sister.
Is that how they do it in Idaho?
That's what the assumption is. Yeah. No, we're from Iowa. Oh.
I get those mixed up. What are you drinking? What have you had that's good?
Okay, so Bob Marley, Hot Marley and the Ailers has a cherry saison. What I'm drinking right now is a barrel-aged stout with cherry added out of a Ghostbuster backpack.
Okay, we had that.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Very good.
Yeah, I got to recommend the cherry saison, too. It's like mom's cherry pie.
There you go.
Very good. That was good. Yes.
That's our next stop.
All right.
And then we'll catch up to you again, I'm sure.
And check in with us later.
Idaho!
Iowa!
We're here with another friend of the show, Mr. Bob Stemski from the state of Wisconsin.
Hello, Packer fans.
What have you had that's good?
Really, to be honest, everything I've had is good. I started off going to some of the tents that weren't populated, didn't have a line that was a mile long, just because I'm lazy. and listen, I'll tell you, I haven't skunked yet. Everything is good. I mean, I'm sure these guys really go through their clubs before they put it out there.
Yeah.
But I haven't even gone to any of the big ones. I haven't. I'm just sticking here with the little ones, and they're great.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's the same with us. We go to the short lines. Because we are also lazy.
Yeah.
But
I've noticed that.
So what's your thoughts about the conference in general this year?
I think it's great. When I came up to it, I was really excited because I know they had it here before and they did a good job. And when I came in, I was really impressed with the facilities and the fact that everybody here was friendly and the ambiance of the place, because when you walk around, it's all the palm trees and all the pretty flowers and everything like that. You know, right? This is late or middle June, and in Wisconsin, we're still sitting here in the snow. So this is a big deal for me. This is the first time I didn't have to wear snowshoes all year.
I think he has to wear hip waders because, it gets deep around him. And it's not snow I'm talking about.
And it does get deep because last night, when I after the semi-pro party again was back, I went back to the room, and I think three or four people stepped on my hands as I was going back to my room. And it wasn't that bad because I found $3 in change.
That's right.
Well, last night was really good. I mean, tons of professional brewers, and they went to 11 o'clock. We stuck around a little while afterwards, but went to 11 o'clock, and it was great. Everybody seemed to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think You know, a lot of the what do you call it, the bigger craft breweries in the past, maybe they just put out their regular stuff, but I think they went to the extremes for us, and I really appreciate that. The fact that they're brewing beer with orange blossoms or pomegranates, stuff that they can't do for the normal, you know, money-wise, they can't do it to the public, but they can do it for us. And listen, they're part of us. They started as one of us. Many of us will follow in their footsteps. So it's wonderful that they share their hopes and dreams by, you know, a couple of these here with tobacco or something in their beer, and it was great. I went to the Arkansas booth where they had it was all, was it possums or was it raccoons that they brewed
from? No, possums are out of season.
Oh, yeah. I see. All right.
Yeah, it's the raccoons that are crossing the road this time of year.
Oh, that time of year. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, it's armadillos, but that's possum on the half shell.
All right, Bob, it's good to see you again.
It took a second for that, Steve. That was good. Armadillo on the half shell. All right, I got it. Thank you.
All right. Good to see you, Bob. See you,
right,
Bob.
Have a great night, and we'll see you next year.
You bet.
Be good.
All right, we're walking up on Hop Barley and the Ailers. We're in search of the Cherry Saison, which the folks here from Idaho say is good. All right.
Was kind enough to take we're here.
Bob, we're talking. We're going from one Bob to another Bob.
Yes, sir.
And tell us who you are and who we're looking at here.
My name is Bob Coughlin. This is Hot Barley and the Ailers from Boulder, Colorado.
And I understand there's a Cherry Saison that is wonderful.
Yeah, that's mine. You want to try it?
You bet.
Yeah, I'll tell you all about them.
It is pouring a beautiful. It has a pinkish hue. All right. While we're tasting, tell us about the beer.
It was a 15-gallon batch. 5 gallons I pulled off without fruit. The rest of it had 10 pounds of sour cherries in it.
That's delicious. What do you think?
It's very nice. Very delicious. Tastes like a cherry pie.
It does. I expected it to be more dry, but there's a bit of sweetness left there that's very nice.
It finished at about 0.06.
So it is very dry, but do you get the sweetness that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I get a little sweet. I mean, not cloyingly so, but just that cherries just come through so nicely. It's wonderful.
Very nice. Good job, Bob.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You bet. Yeah, it'd be good.
Okay, we're still at the Hop Barley and the Ailers, and we're going to talk to a third Bob. This will be our third Bob in a row.
Three Bobs in a row.
All right, Bob, introduce yourself.
I'm Bob Hall. I gave a talk today on Czech dark lagers, and I have a couple here to drink right now.
All right, pour away. Czech dark lagers. I've been into the Pilsners lately, so this will be interesting to see. Oh my goodness, that's a healthy pour. Oh, that's nice. It's a nice and roasty.
Yeah, it is.
All right, tell us about the beer.
So this beer is a Bohemian Pilsner type, Bohemian lager, but it's dark. And instead of having a very hoppy profile and a light malt, it's got a very cola flavor, chocolate, dried fruit, bread crust. And it's because I made this beer with Kara Munich 2 and floor malted Bohemian Pilsner malt.
Very nice.
And sauce hops.
It's great. Wait, tell me again what the hops were. If you said it, I missed it.
It's all Sauce hops.
Okay. It's very nice. Now, is this a recognized style?
It is in the 2015 style guidelines, and so the 2008 style guidelines did not have Czech lagers. So the 2015 style guidelines now have two light lagers, an amber lager, and a dark lager. This is the dark lager style.
Well, welcome to the guidelines. This is very good.
Yeah, the idea today was to produce these beers as examples as to what these beers are going to taste like when we judge them next year when the new guidelines go into competitions.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir.
Cheers.
Thank you, Bob. Cheers. Cheers.
Right. Okay. DinnyCon.
Yes, sir.
Drew Beecham. How's the current book doing?
It depends. Are you our editor or
is our editor listening?
All right, you've got experimental homebrewing that's already out there.
Right.
What's coming up next?
Well, coming up next is Homebrew All-Stars, and it's basically our book where it's the anti-authoritarian voice of homebrewing. Yeah, the idea is all the homebrewing books have been written out there right now have been written with this idea that, oh, hey, I'm the guy writing the book. I know what's best. And really, when I started to learn how to brew, I learned by going and brewing with a bunch of different people. So our hope is, with this book, is give every reader the chance to go virtually brew with a bunch of different all-star brewers and pick up things from each of them as, yeah, that they can absorb and bring into their own brew day.
Yeah, there's 25, 27 different people we've interviewed. People you've heard of, Gordon Strong, John Palmer, guys like that, and people you've never heard of that we think are all-stars just because of what they do and the way they share their information. We profile a guy named Lars Garshall from Norway who's heavily into recreating traditional Norwegian farmhouse ales. And the information he provided is just going to blow American homebrewers' minds. It is so cool.
So give us a hint of what they can learn in the book.
Oh, what's a good lesson?
The thing is that they can learn a lot of different things depending on how they brew, because we're dividing all these people up by archetype. We're going to have the scientists and the recipe formulators the gearheads and stuff like that. Yeah. So as you go through the book, you'll be able to get advice from somebody who thinks like you do, you know, and in effect spend a brew day with Gordon or with John or somebody like that. So the lessons you'll take from each person will depend on what their strength is and what they have to offer.
And, of course, we're also doing everybody's favorite Facebook feature, a personality quiz, so you can find out your brewing personality.
What kind of brewer are you? Do you brew like a hobbit?
What if it just depends on what day it is?
Yeah, well, that could very well be, too, you know. But so anyway, I think it's going to be a real interesting book, and theoretically, if we do our job, it'll be out in time for NHC next year.
Oh, wow. So it's a long-term project, but it will probably feel short-term because time flies.
Our part of it is very short-term, but then it takes a while to get the book actually laid out and get the graphics in there and get it printed and get it back and ready to go.
All we do are the words, and the words are the easy part. You know, the editor and the publisher, they go and they actually take our words and make them and then look all pretty. And it's nice.
And readable.
Yeah. The editor makes what I say. I mean, Drew takes what I say and makes it so normal people can relate to it. And then the editor goes through and takes out everything that shouldn't be in there.
and I want to say, that's the first time I've ever been accused of making things relatable to normal people.
I'm sorry.
Well, this is. Can you believe the weather and the setting and all that?
It's really, really nice. You know, I'm glad that we're a little bit cooler than typical San Diego weather. It's been really hot where I live, so this is really nice. But man, it's great to have these events outside. It's just a gorgeous setting here in this garden.
Yeah, and the crop dusting dissipates so much more quickly outside.
Yeah, that's a good point, James. I hadn't thought about that, but now I feel free.
Just wait just a minute.
Although I will say, I have still walked through some very potent clouds before. Like, oh, man, yeah, I think somebody needs to go see the doctor.
There's no breeze tonight.
Yeah, it'll be a problem later on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, what do they call the inversion or whatever? What's the weather effect?
Yeah, right. Holds everything close to the ground.
All right, guys.
All right.
Well, good luck. We'll look forward to the next book.
Thanks,
right,
man. Thank you. It's been great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I love the concept. Love the concept of the
great,
book.
Great. I'm glad, Steve. That's what I want to hear, man, because we're working our asses off.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Will Glasby.
Hey, how's it going?
Formerly of Northwest Arkansas, then of Brooklyn, now of
of here.
Yeah, here in San Diego. I got here just in time.
Yeah, your timing is good. Are you going to be in Baltimore, working in Baltimore next year?
I might. I might have a job in Baltimore around this time next year.
Now, what are we in search of? Tell us about the style that we are in search of here.
Okay, so, you know, I've been tasting things here for about 2 hours now, and I think the thing that's made the biggest impression on me so far is a Roggen beer I got here at the table from the Long Beach Homebrewers. Now, I used to live in Long Beach also, so this is a nice little trip down memory lane for me to go over to this booth. And let's see if they still have it. It was really good. They might have run out.
John, introduce yourself and where you're from.
John Silvertooth. I'm from Long Beach.
And we're looking for the Roggen beer?
Sure. Roggen beer. I'd like me to pour you some Roggen beer. Yeah. I will do.
Fix me up. So tell you, what is Roggen beer?
So Roggen beer, and this is why I love homebrewing. Roggen beer is a beer that's very hard to find in the store. It is basically... can I get a little as well? Can I get some of the same, please? Thank you. Basically, it's kind of a Hefeweizen made with rye malt. You just don't come across it very often. It's something I've read about but haven't had a lot of examples of. And I think this one's really good. I think it's basically exactly the way I imagined it. So there's probably at least 4 or 5 beers that I've homebrewed in my life because I read about them or I heard about them, but I couldn't buy them. And so I'd actually, you know, take a stab at brewing this or that style without ever actually having had it. And, you know, I think that that's part of what's really cool about homebrewing is it causes you to really, you know, kind of stretch your imagination a little bit and kind of, you know, dip into your little... your box of tools and your skills to try and come up with that thing that you know is out there that you know can be made but you maybe necessarily haven't had before. And that's a real reach of imagination. And it's very likely that the person who made this really lovely Roggen beer had to go through that very journey. And it's probably the best thing I've tasted here tonight for that reason.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's first of all, it's a very clean beer. And there's a little bit of spiciness to it.
It's very recognizable as being brewed with that German Hefeweizen yeast, I think. It's got that cloven flavor. I get a little bit of banana in there, but you definitely taste the rye as well.
And it's got a very substantial body, which rye is probably responsible for as well. It's a hard to tell in this light, but it's what? How would you characterize that color? Like a dark amber, maybe?
Yeah, it is really dark out here, but I'd say that's probably fair. Maybe copper.
Mm. Oh man, that is that's really nice. It's really refreshing. It's almost like would you say it was like a Dunkelweiss?
It is similar to a Dunkelweiss, but again, you taste the rye, you know, and it's a combination of flavors that, you know, there's probably like 2 breweries in Germany that make this, you know, and if you could get them by the time they like go across the ocean, they're just not in the same shape.
Right.
And so if you really want to have a great one, you know, you got to homebrew it, and that's why we're here.
Man, it's a wonderful beer. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mike Tonsmeyer, who do we have here?
Introduce yourself.
I'm Peter Barricone. I'm the head brewer and run all the operations up at Toolbox Brewing Company.
And a home brewer still.
And a home brewer a little bit, yes.
Okay, now this is the booth. What's the booth that people have been standing in line around the
it's
block?
It's actually, it's our club booth, so we're always Society of Barley Engineers, but the president, I, and a couple of us love sour beer, so we kind of did a split off. And we do club sours every year now for the last... They used to do them about like 10 years ago. And then it was Bill Sobieski, who's another great sour brewer, would run that. And then I kind of came to the club and reignited the passion of sour brewing. And so now we're up to like... That was our second club brew in the last 2 years. And a lot of those lambics are our club's lambics. And it's really cool to see our club come up. And all of those are solid. Let's just see that. It's cool.
So talk about the beers, Mike. What are you tasting? I got nothing.
Somebody poured something random in my glass. I honestly have no idea what I'm drinking.
I have one of my lambics. It's not a lambic. I'm trying to stray away from the term lambic to respect Jean Manuel.
American wild
beers, sour beers.
So how are these? How are these? Are these spontaneously fermented, or what?
No. The homebrews I've ever made have been spontaneous. They've always been yeast cultures that you could buy, and bacteria you could buy. But lately, at the brewery, we just recently did a spontaneous starter, and took the yeast from that, and added it to 2 oak barrels. So hopefully, in a year, we'll see if it's good or bad. It'll be the best or the worst thing I've made in my life.
And Ryan was saying these are aged in like big, like 50-gallon, plastic barrels.
No. So everything we have, we don't have any of the plastic food grade totes.
No, not the brewery. These beers.
Oh yeah, the lambic beers from the club. They actually use old Cossack bins, which are pretty cool because they're food grade, 55-gallon tubs that are airtight. So yeah, we have a good relationship with Stone. They go through all those all the time. So our club, we can produce. I think on those brew days, they're producing about 110 to 120 gallons of beer. Of work that day, and we let them go for about 6 months, and everyone in the club kind of has a little bit of a hand in growing up different cultures. And then after about 6 months, we transfer it back to the people in the club and let them do what they want to do with the beer. Add more microbes, add more oak, add different fruits, serve it as is, whatever. And it's really cool to see. You can kind of taste that base beer. I love it. So this one, I was like, this is a Masumoto beer that I'm drinking that we have on right now.
Yeah. Why Masumoto?
Chris Cronoga is an amazing man. That's pushing. He's really getting these farmers that are really interested in. They make amazing fruit, but they're really curious about what goes on with fruit and beer. And it's really badass how much they're. I can cuss, right?
Yeah,
that's not a bad
bit.
One, but
PG.
F words. But anyways, they're doing a really cool job getting out to breweries and breweries that can really make some cool beers. And trying to showcase their fruit. I know they're all through San Diego, a lot of the breweries. I know Mike did some work with them with Modern Times. Lost Abbey uses them. We've used them in with some of our beers. They just produce some of the best stone fruits you've ever had in your life. And who doesn't love a stone fruit beer?
No, it's interesting. There really are some fruits that really benefit from being super ripe and super interesting. And then there's some that, like, I generally feel like cherries are one. Like, cherries are always relatively similar. Like, cherries are very...
They have a cherry flavor, yeah.
Yeah, they're cherry flavored. But something, yeah, like peaches or something like that can be, you know, there's always that, you know, oh, you can't make a good peach beer. Well, maybe people just weren't using good peaches.
Yeah, or maybe you weren't a good brewer. But no, I'm learning as a lot of my friends, not you, Mike, you're an amazing brewer. But some people that say that,
Yeah. Maybe
that's the case. But everyone I found out are obsessed with stone fruit beers. If you put peaches, apricots, or nectarines, or plums, or pluots, anything that has a stone in it, doesn't have to be free, it can be free, or whatever the fuck you want, whatever you want to call it, but...
Not cling stone?
Yeah, whatever you want to call them. But those fruits produce amazing beer.
Yeah.
And they're really cool, you can ferment them, or you can't ferment them, different flavors, but at the end of the day, I'm learning, I've never given someone a stone fruit sour, or a stone fruit beer that they didn't love.
What have you got there?
This is actually a sour I made for the club. It's actually made of Masumoto peaches, I believe. Oh, geez, this thing was... I forgot about it. Aged at least 2.5 years.
The group brew?
No, this is one of mine. So we have another one that's a group brew, but since we have so many of the other ones on there with the same house flavor, I said we should put this one on. It's a little different.
Do you mind?
No, go try it, absolutely.
My cold sore is about gone away.
That's all right. I got herpes too, so.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. I like to cross those lines when people joke. It's a little undercarbonated. Last minute, I kind of ran in. I had to keg this beer out. You know, you make beer every single day. It's so hard to go back to your car, boys, and be like, that's what I want to do when I get home now. It's...
Wow.
My home brewing passion has turned into a career, and couldn't be happier. When I got to wake up early in the morning, I go, oh, it's 5 a.m. Oh, I got to make beer. Let's go.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Very complex.
Yeah.
It's very, very tart, but there's a sweetness there that comes from the fruit flavors, and then there's a spice.
Probably, right?
I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of oak in my sour beers.
Well, there you go.
I'm not trying to do so much of the flavor, but I mean, I think it adds some cool things during the ferment that without oak, it doesn't add. I'm not looking for vanilla or the lignins in that you get from a spirit age oak beer, but I need that oak. Not only does it help my microbes, but it's just, it adds produces something. Like when I use pits, I did there's pits in this beer too. So I actually threw the stones in the beer.
Oh, cool.
That adds another kind of weird complexity that's different that I got from Belgian brewers that do with the creek. And they always add the pits. So
it's easier too.
It is a lot easier. Well, the carboy actually is not, but I thought it added another dimension of flavor that was different. That you
and same thing. Leave the skins on.
Everything. I just cut a quarter of them.
Yeah,
and throw them straight
drop
in.
The pit in last.
Yeah. Actually, one of the quarters always had the pit on it.
Clingstone.
Yeah, clinged it. You know.
Thank you, sir.
A little bit more.
Oh, yes.
Can't cheers me with an empty glass. It's bad luck.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. Okay, Mike, who are you talking to?
My buddy Andre from the DC Homebrewers.
Introduce yourself, Andre.
Hi, folks. My name is Andre Henry. I'm from the DC area, a member of the DC Homebrewers. And we're currently enjoying my Cherry Creek, which is about 18 months old right now.
Very nice.
What kind of microbes did you pitch into this?
Unfortunately, without my laptop, which is my notebook, I really can't give the full. But dregs, I'd say from at least about a dozen bottles. I don't think there's anything commercial in this. Oh, it's all dregs.
Oh wow! It's a cherry flavor, but it's not overpoweringly sweet and cherry. But it's got a really nice cherry finish to it. Talk about the process. I mean, how did you introduce the dregs and treat them and such?
Yeah, so I when I made this creek, I actually had the choice of I had three different sour beers finishing at the same time. So I actually got to choose between the three and decide which one was most appropriate, or at least I thought was most appropriate for cherries. This was actually the one I ended up choosing was my last choice. Going into the process, it would have been my last choice. But as it turns out, it's a fairly simple blonde sour ale, primaried, I believe, with the Westmalle strain, and then just a bunch of dregs. It was a lot of, actually, I used a lot of oats. It was the first time using oats as part of the wort making process. So I think the bugs had a lot to work on. They, about a 1 month primary, about 11 months in a 5 gallon carboy racked up to the neck.
And then on to fruit?
And then after a year, I actually had three different batches to choose from. I thought that this one would be the most appropriate for the cherries. Then I put back onto the fruit for about 2 months total. It was a little bit shocking. I think it took like 8 or 9 days for like the Brett to kick back up and actually get a secondary fermentation going. Almost blew out the airlock because I took off a little bit of beer just to like allow the cherries in, but it was still fairly close to the top.
Awesome. No, I mean, it's really well balanced and sour without being disruptive. I mean, I always think a good sour beer shouldn't be a challenge to drink. And this certainly isn't. And then nice balanced cherry flavor on top of that, but without obscuring the base beer underneath.
Well said. That's what I would have said. I think it just tastes real good.
Yeah. What an amazing night. For anybody that is listening to this at some point in the future, this is probably my favorite club night I've ever been to. Just outside, like under the stars, under the palm trees, literally hundreds of beers to choose from. All sorts of actually really interesting sours. We've been, Michael and I, before this little podcast, we were sort of scouting about trying to see the good offerings. And I look forward to hearing the interviews from the guys that made them.
All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, James.
To be interviewed, I think.
We're just catching sour beers and sour brewers on the fly. Who are you and where are you from?
My name's Dave Crane, and I'm from San Diego. Well, I'm from Northern California, rather. I live in San Diego now, but yeah, it's been about 12, 15 years.
And what's in my glass?
Your glass has it's called Rubus Cube. It's a blackberry sour. This beer was a blend of 50% Roggen beer and a 50% Dunkelweizen that we had, 2.5 gallons each left over of our brew day, and we blended them, and then we added the East Coast Yeast 23, the Oud Brun strain, and let that go for, this was in 2013, so 2 years, and then we added some blackberry fruit puree about 6 weeks before bottling, and let that go, and here we are. It actually got a gold medal in the Mayfair competition up in L.A. last couple weeks ago. So,
wow.
That's one of the bigger homebrew competitions, right? I mean, that's a lot of entries.
Yeah. I think there were, well, I don't know. I think there were like 8 or 10 in that. So, in that one slot, but I'm not sure.
It's really nice. I mean, it's one of those great examples of how the base beer maybe doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't taste like a Dunkelweiss. I don't get the banana. I don't get, you know, all those esters get broken down.
Right.
But it's really nice. I mean, that bright acidity without being overbearing or acidic or annoying or anything like that. Blackberry is one of those fruit to me that it always integrates very nicely. It doesn't scream out like cherry or raspberry. You know, it's not that identifiable. It just adds this great winey, juicy, jammy fruitiness.
Yeah. It's a fun beer, man. I couldn't believe it actually came out as good as it did. You know, we were just Costco. It's Costco fruit too. You know, it wasn't anything special. We just froze it and had it in the freezer for a long time, and then blended it down, hand blended it, and went to it.
It's got a fairly substantial body to it as well. I mean, it's not a thin beer. It's not, you know.
I mean, we've been drinking lambics a lot, so I mean, this has a lot more substance to it.
I mean, you think that the Roggen beer, we tasted a Roggen beer earlier with Will, and you know, that's a fairly substantial beer, probably because of the rye content. Does the rye stand up better to the bugs than barley or wheat?
I think so, and Jeff Crane actually in his talk today was talking. He loves flaked rye. He's the sour guy at Council Brewing, and he was saying that flaked rye with that extra protein he feels really beneficial to his beers.
It's very nice.
Cheers, thanks guys.
Yeah,
thank you. Okay, so now Sean Terrell has dragged us over into the into this area with Mead Makers, and Andy Sparks has joined us.
We're drinking on a loading dock, as brewers do so often.
So who are we talking to?
Pat McNeely.
Hank McNeely.
Jim McNeely.
And what are we drinking? What am I drinking here?
You're drinking a blueberry with maple syrup and chipotle pepper.
And it's very nice.
And he's drinking a blueberry traditional mead. Blackberry traditional mead.
Blackberry honey, no actual blackberries.
Yes. Oregon blackberry honey. Yeah.
And what I've got here is a tart cherry sizer. This made it to the second round, so feel free to try it.
So I have a question. I mean, I haven't done a lot of meads. People generally say, oh, you know, meads, you have to age them for a year, 2 years, 3 years. Particularly, you said this was about 14% alcohol in that ballpark. What do you credit with how, other than the fact that I've been drinking beer for the last, you know, 3 hours, what do you credit with it being such a smooth, mellow alcohol? Are you doing interesting nutrient additions? Is there a yeast strain that you'd particularly advocate?
71B.
Yeah, and staggered nutrient additions. All the melomels were with Fermate O. The traditional was with Fermate K and DAP, diammonium phosphate. But we've actually switched to Fermate O strictly for the staggered nutrient addition. And it seems that these melomels were like 2 weeks, they're done fermenting, and they're ready to go to the secondary.
So we've heard for a while that, you know, the staggered nutrient additions.
What? It's 9 or 10 o'clock on club night here at NHC.
California.
Welcome to California.
And now we switched to 14% alcohol mead. So it can only get better from here. So you can do a high gravity mead in a short amount of time and not have to age. I mean, do you get any benefit at all from aging this for a year or something?
I'm sure it would age really well, but I mean, it turns out fast and drinkable, and I don't know. I'm sure it will age good, and then I keg it, so I'm like bulk aging everything and kegging it so I can blend. And I mean, basement's full of kegs of mead, and we'll sit down there and play with it. Like the cinnamon stuff we have is just a traditional. We do tinctures, like the chipotle The chipotle was all a tincture that was added and blended in. Yeah.
So you get a lot more control over it, though.
Absolutely. We'll sit there with a graduated cylinder and say, here's, you know, we 30 milliliters, one drop. That's too much. Maybe a little bit less. And then we'll just dial it in to write exactly how we want it.
How would you fare with kegs of 14% mead at your house there, Sean?
At 10,000 feet, not so well. I've actually never made mead at home, and tasting these is invigorating my interest. It's, especially knowing that I can turn it around that fast. You know, as a homebrewer gone pro, I don't have a whole lot of free time, and just knowing that I can do something like that makes me a little more willing to experiment.
And you know, if you're, I think weren't you talking about doing meads because you will?
Yeah.
You produce, you know, beer for a living.
It's true.
And so you do the meads for the homebrewing.
Yeah, because, you know, I make beer 5 days out of the week, you know, if I'm lucky, often 6 or 7 days out of the week. And when I'm at home now, I'm looking for something that's a little bit of a change of pace. And so, yeah, I'll do the mead at home because I can still enter homebrew competitions if I want to, if I make something really good because it was made at my house. The actual act of making the mead on the day is only a couple hours, you know. Of course, you have to wait a long time for it to be good, but I think it's just really interesting. Yeah, I can get honey where I live that somebody else can't get where they live. It's very local. It's got a lot of terroir, and I've had a lot of fun playing around with it.
Andy Sparks. We are nearing the end here, or at least of the recording. So, what do you think? You get to have the closing remarks.
Well, I've had a wonderful time as always. Club Night is fabulous. I'll be honest, I've had maybe more delicious meads this year than Crazy Grid beers. There's still lots of great beers here, but I've had some fabulous meads.
All right. Sounds like a good note to end on. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again to everybody that we talked to, including, of course, at the end there, buddy Andy Sparks from thehomebrewery.com. And you'll be hearing a lot more from our friends as we have 7 more episodes to come from San Diego. I think that's the count. I think we came away with 8 episodes. Such an amazing time. And the American Homebrewers Association and the organizing clubs did a great job. Just a tremendous amount of information and a tremendous amount of camaraderie and a tremendous amount of awesome beer. If you celebrate the 4th of July, be careful out there this weekend. May you enjoy much great food and much homebrew. And may your fingers remain unburned and attached. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. If there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Hydro Flask, Insulated Stainless Steel, Wide Mouth, Water Bottle, and Beer Growler. 64-ounce bundle with Jug Lug. And ColecoVision Flashback Classic Game Console Deluxe Collector's Edition. Boy, that's cool. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, there, buddy. Thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is brought by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.